Hi, I'm Jane Hilsden, marketing consultant and founder of Dragonfly Marketing. Welcome to this episode of the How To Do Marketing Show, a no-nonsense podcast about marketing for small business. It's our mission at Dragonfly Marketing to put marketing on the agenda for every regionally based small business in Australia. Why? Because we know that when marketing is done properly, it can help your business grow. We believe small businesses are the backbone of our nation. When your business grows, it benefits not only you and your family, it benefits your whole community. Small businesses create a vibrant and connected economy. We employ local people, we donate to local charities, and we work together to build resilient and thriving regional communities. The How To Do Marketing Show is a podcast just for you and your small business. Bursting with marketing insight and information, this show will be a fabulous resource to help you know all there is to know about the topic of marketing for small business. In this episode, we are talking about the topic of thought leadership. This is an interesting topic and one that you may not have spent a lot of time thinking about. And if it's not something that you have touched on a lot, or even if it is, I really encourage you to listen to Nina Christian explain what thought leadership is all about and how it can add so much value to your small business. Nina is founder and managing director of marketing agency Braveda. She has been a marketer for 25 years and worked with global brands, small business and startups, both in Australia and around the world. Nina is the chair of the Victorian Committee of the Australian Marketing Institute, and that's how I met her. She's a multi-award winner, and she is an absolute enthusiast for the thought leadership and content marketing space. Nina talks about what thought leadership is, who should use it, how you can publish thought leadership, and what kind of return it can drive to your business. If you want to gain a real perspective about what's involved in thought leadership and how you can use it within your marketing mix, then tune in hard to this ep. Nina, what is thought leadership and why is it an important concept for small business owners to get their head around?
Thought leadership, in its purest essence, is usually defined as content which is written, spoken, or other that an individual or an organization creates about a topic that they're an expert in, mm-hmm. that usually is educational, inspirational, yeah. and transformational in nature. So at its core, it is someone sharing their expertise and perspective on something with the specific purpose of inspiring, guiding, shaping an outlook, and ideally inspiring or motivating an action.
Okay. And so why is this important for small business owners to get their head around this?
Because the landscape has changed, and therefore the way people are consuming information has changed. We know that the marketplace is fatigued at the moment from the consumption of too much information.
Yeah.
Because so many people are putting information out, it means there is a far greater differentiator between what people perceive as valuable versus more noise in the marketplace.
Yes.
So I'll give you an example. Think back 10 years, you know, and the good old fact sheet.
Yeah. That the ATO still loves to get out there.
Kind of feel wasting your time. I think like 15 years ago, they were the thing, you know, 20 years ago, they were the thing for companies to show their expertise. But A, nobody's interested in reading that kind of thing anymore. B, they don't have time. They're not going to be bothered. And most importantly, it is usually information, whereas we've evolved as a marketplace and a society where we don't actually want information anymore. We want connection and we want transformation. The information, it may be a byproduct, but it's not the be-all and the end-all. And what good thought leadership does actually create some sort of impact. It's a catalyst for some sort of shift, be that an outlook shift or a perspective shift or an action shift.
Uh-huh, right. So it's more than just, here's some fun facts or here's some literal tips. It's a bigger picture kind of concept that might really tap into someone's, I guess, bigger picture thinking or belief system or, you know, something that, as you said, is a bit more transformative than just gaining a little bit of knowledge here or there.
Correct. It's more than about knowledge. And I'll give you an example. If we use someone like Arianna Huffington and her talk about sleep, importance of sleep, the fact that we need to sleep is A, not a new concept. B, it's not something that we don't know. And there's probably thousands of professors that have PhDs and all the scientific resources and have done, you know, thesis on all of the reasons and logic and everything that we need to know about sleep.
Yeah.
But Arianna was able to somehow package up and distill and present that information in a very clear, concise, easy to understandable and most important actionable format, which then got the message actually got through and it landed.
Yes.
You can use that as an example. She wasn't necessarily selling something. She had an objective. So with thought leadership, from a commercial perspective, it might be social change perspective. All of those can fall under the thought leadership umbrella. But in her perspective, getting people to be more healthy through sleep was her objective. Mm-hmm. And because of the way that she framed, presented, distilled that information and was consistent, she became known as a thought leader in that space. And most importantly, because the words and advice that she gave actually inspired change and got people thinking and talking, that in my mind is a really good example of modern day thought leadership. And there are plenty of others, and you know, we can talk about some of those later. But
I'm familiar with the work that Arianna did around that sleep, and I can remember consuming some of her content. But I remember too, as well as her being a compelling kind of figure to be able to, as you said, kind of deliver this concept that wasn't new, that wasn't anything, you know, delivering any kind of facts that were new to us. And she also pitched it in a way of, you know, if you want to continue achieving the goals that you're achieving, if you want to keep doing what you're doing in business, then you can't afford to burn out. You know, so I think that the difference between a PhD explaining the scientific facts around the physiological benefits and emotional benefits of sleep versus, you know, Arianna coming to us with the idea that if you don't get your sleep, you will not be the successful person that you are, completely resonated with her audience. So
absolutely. And just having that lens always of the what's in it for me in terms of your audience, it's almost exactly like what we're doing here around, ironically, thought leadership around thought leadership. So we're not going to go into academic expose of the history of thought leadership. We're coming at it from a perspective of what is it, why is it important, but most importantly, why is it important to you? Why do you need, you know, what can you take away from this and put into action in your own business that's going to make a difference for you or your life? So at its core, it's something that you share that has a tangible impact and or improvement on a person's business or life.
Yeah, nice. Nice. I love it. Okay. Now, here's a question, and particularly from the perspective of a small business owner. Yep. If you're going to enter the thought leadership realm, does that have to be key person dependent? Because I guess if you look at the definition there, thought, you know, comes from something that's been thought up in someone's brain. You know, generally thought leadership is assigned to a particular person, a key person of influence. What happens? I mean, I guess the first question is, does it have to be key person dependent? Can brands be thought leaders? And two, I guess why I'm asking that is because what if the small business owner goes, well, thought leadership is not really for me because I don't want to be famous. I don't want to be in front of the camera. I don't want to be in the videos. I don't want to be quoted, you know. I just want to be contributing to that thought leadership space as a business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a really good question, and one that I have seen a lot of businesses really grapple with.
Yeah.
And for many years, I was also that person as well. Like, I didn't want to be out there and front and center. And I talk to a lot of businesses on a regular basis that ask the same question. The answer that I would like to be able to give them is a bit different to the reality answer that I feel that as a marketer I need to give.
Yeah.
So I'd like to say that it's fine. You don't have to be the person. And there are ways that you can do it where you as the business owner don't have to be the person.
Yeah.
But you have to consider the implications of that.
Yeah.
And I'll circle back to that in a second. The reality is you can communicate and should communicate as a brand, but the reality of our modern day situation is that people want to know who's behind the brand.
Yeah.
And what does that brand stand for? And more that's driven by the founder, the managing director, partner, whoever is steering and leading that organization. And that's a trend that's not only applying to small business, it's applying to big business as well.
Yeah.
So it's something that's across the board, and some companies are doing better than others. A lot of the more progressive companies, that comes very naturally to them, because especially a lot of the more socially conscious companies from the outset, they realize that the founder needs to take an important role in
determining
being
the face and the spokesperson.
The stops here. You know, in the past, there was, and not even that long ago, maybe 10 years ago, you know, polished and professional, and behind the veneer of the company wall or facade or brick or whatever it is, was quite acceptable. And companies and small businesses aspired to be like big business, professional, polished, presentable. Yeah. Whereas now there's a shift towards big businesses trying to be like small businesses, which is open, transparent, and raw and real. And the reality is, as much as we don't want it to be the case, that our audiences, they want to see more of the unpolished and unprofessional than they do of the professional. Now, I'm not saying that's all the time. There's a time and place for everything. Yeah. And that is another really big shift that we have to get our heads around, is that audiences are starting to regard brands more and more like personalities.
Yeah.
In the sense that you and I, or any person, would show up differently in a different place based on who we are and what we do. So who we are going to be if we are doing a keynote speech is going to be very different to when we are training a small group, which is going to be very different to when we're at home with our family or when we're relaxing with our colleagues. Yeah. We're the same person with the same values and the same ethos, but how we look, how we speak is going to be different in all of those contexts. Now, take that concept and overlay that on a brand, and that's what people are wanting from brands. They want to say, okay, here's the company website, here's the polished and professional veneer, that's the line. But now I want to see, what is that brand? How do they show up on LinkedIn? How do they show up on Facebook? How do they show up on Instagram? Now, how are they showing up on TikTok? You know, how and the way a brand is going to show up on all of those, it needs to be
nuanced,
contextualized, appropriate to that, because what people are wanting to see from a brand is very different. Just to use TikTok for an example, that's a platform where businesses are just only now starting to show up, not many yet, but they will soon. Like, there's a perception that people think, well, I'm not a teenage or, you know, preteen girl doing, you know, cool little, you know, funky wave your arms in the air dances. I'm sure we've seen them all. Oh, that's TikTok's not for me. But there were some statistics that I saw which absolutely blew me away, which was not only the fact that there were over 1.5 billion downloads of that platform. Okay, I still kind of put it in the younger generations basket. But when I saw then that one of the most searched for hashtags was office life, I was like, flip, that's not like preteen 9 and 10 year old girls doing office life, seeing what brands are doing. This is people who actually want to see what's going on behind the scenes in brands they like. And then,
oh, I see. Yeah, so it was like a hashtag office life, wasn't it? So there's like a, and yeah, right.
And of those users, 65% of those are actually over the age of 18.
Yeah.
So I'm giving you this as an example to say, if you think for a second you can show up as this corporate, you know, polished and professional brand on TikTok, no way. Mm. You need, that's where people want to see people, crazy stuff, or yeah. And it's endearing. And it's not to say those values are going to be different to how they are presenting when they're doing an industry lecture or a media interview. The values are going to be consistent. The expression is different.
Yeah.
And so bringing that back to thought leadership and the question is, it is going to be really, really hard for a business or a brand. Like, you might be a small business, but the reality is you still are a brand if you've got a company name.
Yeah.
It's going to be very difficult for you to show up as this multi-dimensional brand, which is what customers really want if they're going to have a connection with you without having some behind the scenes look at the founder. Now, that's not to say that the founder has to be out there and talking all the time. There's a whole lot of ways that that could happen. They don't necessarily need to be in front of the camera.
Yeah.
But I think there needs to be some sort of transparency voice and acknowledgement behind that if it's your business.
Yeah.
And looking back to what I touched on initially, yes, you can put other people in front of the camera, other people in your photos, other people as your spokesperson. But, you know, you need
to... You're going to have to get in there somewhere.
A, ultimately the buck stops with you.
Yeah.
And two, are those people really living, eating, breathing, sleeping the brand values that you represent
as passionately as you?
From a risk mitigation perspective, what if that person moves on and goes and works for your competitor?
Yes.
Or they have a really bad social fail because that goes viral. What's the impact on your brand?
Yeah.
So there's all these things to consider if you want to quote unquote assign thought leadership to someone else. And ultimately it's pretty risky because the statistics are really compelling, especially in the B2B space around the value of thought leadership. So Edelman PR did a very wide study of over 1,000 businesses last year looking at B2B thought leadership. And of those, 75% of those businesses surveyed said that they will follow an organization based on their thought leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So 75, right?
Yeah.
Which is massive these days because, you know, we don't have the yellow pages anymore.
Like,
marketing's changed. 75% will actively follow a business based on their thought leadership. But here's the kicker, and this is where it's, you know, businesses beware. The same study showed that 60% of people will actively stop following a business based on poor thought leadership.
Wow.
So even though it is such a powerful channel, it's not one to be taken lightly.
Because
it is a two-edged sword. On the one hand, the business benefits are enormous. And look, I just gave you the stats for how many will follow a business. There's also stats around how many will do business with a company, pay a premium based on thought leadership. I mean, that's really compelling as well. I think it's 61% of businesses said they would pay more for the same product based on good thought leadership. And I think it's 58% said that they would award business to an organization based on their thought leadership. So the evidence is very, very compelling
that
thought leadership drives sales.
Mm.
But it is this two-edged sword because it's in the past, if you put out mediocre thought leadership, at best it was just kind of glossed over or ignored.
Ignored, but yeah.
The stakes are so much higher now. And look, we won't even go there. What happens if you put a foot wrong?
Now, we don't want to turn small business owners off thought leadership here.
No, we don't.
But it's something to be taken seriously.
It's something to be taken seriously. If you're going to go out there and put information out, it needs to be...
Do it well.
You know? Yeah, exactly. That's your best the bottom line. Don't put out rubbish stuff. And yeah. I don't think if you're trying hard and your heart's in it, your customers will know that. I'm not saying that you have to have high-level, ultra-corporate... BHP kind of prospectus budget. Budget and, you know, starchy and overly, you know, level creative or anything like that. If your heart's in it and the content is good and it's helping people and the basic philosophy of serving, not selling, you really actually are helping make their business better, you're helping make their lives better, that's a really good guiding principle to go by. And people will appreciate you bringing your knowledge, your insights, and your perspective to the table. So while there is that word of warning in there, it is a reality that you could be losing out on 75% of customers if you're not doing it. And that's a good positive.
So, okay. So it is important to get the key person out there to some degree. There are some considerations around it. We do need to take it seriously. We may even need to get our teenagers' accounts of TikTok going and go and learn some Charlie D'Amelio moves to get our message across on TikTok if that's where we need to be. But what, in all seriousness, what kind of content are we sharing via thought leadership? So, when I say that, I mean what kind of information, and I think you've kind of touched on that already in terms of this is kind of bigger picture, you know, probably more sitting aligned with the philosophical side of business or topics or matters. What kind of information and what kind of content, you know, we talked about fact sheets before, but are we, you know, is thought leadership blogs, is it video, is it kind of meatier documents like ebooks, or can it be snippets and posts and images, pretty kind of little graphics that we share on Instagram? What are we sharing?
Yeah, absolutely. Really, really good point. So it's any and all of the above, anything that's actually you're putting out that's content that from which they can derive value can be thought leadership. So yes, it can be blogs, can be articles, can be books, but equally it can be appearing in your local newspaper. It can be writing a column. It can be doing an interview on television. It can be a guest post. It can be somebody else talking about you. All of that is contributing. So we don't need to limit it to what we call modern day social media content marketing. You know, is it a video, a blog, a quote, a post? It is all of the expressions of your business. In terms of what is most in demand at the moment, there is some compelling evidence around that, in that people are less likely to go with really lengthy white papers and downloads and ebooks and all of that. They want snackable content, something that they can consume in a couple of minutes that's going to give them a quick win. So even if you're looking at platforms like LinkedIn, and you might have noticed this yourself, just the change in the way people are consuming information. Before, it was all about the articles, and the more articles people wrote, then that was what was getting viewership. But nowadays, it seems to be posts are getting a lot more attention than articles, and people are looking for value in posts, not just a post about an article. Same for downloads. People are not going to be as quick to give their email away for information now. They'll transact with you, giving you their email address, if you're going to give them something of value that they can actually go away and implement and actually get some sort of a result out of. If you don't actually deliver on that promise of giving them some sort of a result, well, you might get their email address, but you're not going to get their trust. Yes. And ultimately, for a business, this is the intention behind why you would even do this, is because you want to build up that trust. And that trust is a platform then for connection, for which then serves to build audience and customer loyalty, which in turn then has a commercial impact. So it starts with the trust. So you want to make sure that you're delivering on the promise and that you are thinking about how is this piece, this post, this video, this article, this talk that I'm doing. For a long time, businesses have given talks at the local Rotary Club. That's thought leadership. It's sharing what you know for the benefit of helping others.
And so you mentioned there that this is not just limited to the digital field, that, you know, it is still a thing to get your thought leadership disseminated against, I guess, through might be print media, it could be being interviewed by your local radio station. I mean, it could even be something like being interviewed on podcasts, which seems to be very popular at the moment. So if people wanted to go out, particularly with the media, because I think that's something that is overlooked a lot of the time in small business in terms of kind of reaching out to the media to be featured in an article or to become the go-to kind of expert on a particular topic. Do you have any recommendations about how small business owners might be able to pitch themselves to media or, you know, at least get in front of the right journalists or bloggers or whoever it might be?
Well, I think, first of all, being very intentional about why you want to show up, what you want to share and what the objective of that is important. And then knowing your story in terms of why you're credible and why would they choose you? Because at the end of the day, they want an interesting story. They want to give value to their viewers, listeners, readers. And if what you have to say is going to help them do that and make them look good, their platform look good, then that's going to be an easier sell. So coming at it from that perspective is really, really important. There's a number of ways you can do that, and that's going to depend on the business and the budget and the approach and the competency of the people involved. You can engage a PR firm, and a lot of what they do as part of the typical day-to-day of what they do would be extracting a lot of thought leadership and putting it out there for you and creating opportunities. You can do that yourself, and there's various ways where you can actually go and learn step-by-step the process to actually do that and engage with journalists. And interestingly, there are a lot of journalists and PR people who are now teaching people how to DIY, because it is really a thing, people learning to do it themselves, and with the shift towards media being a lot more accessible. The other thing I'd say is that looking at platforms that may not necessarily be your traditional media, like your TV, radio, print, but they may be reaching your audience. So it could be industry publications, could be events, and it could be third-party newsletters, for example, and thinking about, do you have content that would be relevant and helpful to that audience? And so, look, there are various considerations that one always has to take into account, but I think if you keep that as your bottom line, is just always looking for opportunities of where you could bring value. And I kind of don't like to use that because it's a bit of an overused term now, this whole thing of bring value. But effectively, if what you have to say will help someone's business or help someone's life in a tangible way, this is important, and you're prepared to give that away. Not, well, I'm only going to give you that if you buy a consultation or buy my product or whatever. The whole thing about thought leadership is leveraging the principle of reciprocity, being generous. So putting out there your credibility, showing yourself as an expert so that people actually do trust you. So there's going to be that giving part of what you do. Looking at whatever platforms online or offline can support that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So here's a question for you, and I'm sure it doesn't have a definitive answer. How long does it become? How long does it take to become a thought leader? So if someone's listening to this and going, this sounds like something that's pretty important to do, when would they start to see some of the effects of their thought leadership?
Yep. Like you said, it's a how long is a piece of string answer. However, there's a few guiding principles that I can throw out there. It's going to depend on where you're starting from, and do you already have an audience? Do you already have credibility, and are you already known for something? Then your pathway to becoming a wider known thought leader is going to be accelerated and exponentially quicker than someone who's starting from ground zero, not ever done anything. But if we take the person who's not done anything at all, assume that they do have deep area of expertise, mm-hmm. competency and experience mm-hmm. in their field. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's really important that I haven't mentioned so far to take into consideration for any and all thought leadership these days is that it's really important to have a position on something. It's really important not to be just spouting out information.
Be a fence sitter. Don't be a fence sitter.
That's it. Like to be a thought leader, you don't actually have to come up with a groundbreaking new thought that no one's ever heard before. Yeah. You do need to have a position on that. And just to give you another high profile example that, you know, many of the listeners here I'm sure will relate to, someone like Simon Sinek. Mm-hmm. And his books start with why, and his talks start with why. The whole concept of being driven by purpose was not necessarily something new, but he came with a new perspective on it, which was this is not just important, this is the essence, and everything comes out from there. And his expression of it was in a way that people could understand. So, where I go with that, you don't have to feel that you can't be a thought leader because you haven't come up with some whole new concept or terminology or framework or anything like that. You can simply take a position on something. Yeah. So I'll give you a very personal example that I think may help your listeners understand. So a few years ago, I started helping young marketers who had graduated from university and feeling very stuck because they got this piece of paper, a marketing degree, and went out and started looking for jobs and just couldn't find one because, and you know, at the bottom line, the way that they were trying to do it was still very old school, which is I've got this piece of paper, I've gone and studied hard, now give me a job and train me and give me practical experience, please. Mm. And from my experience in working with many of them, you know, I had developed a lot of insight and useful information that helped them. And so I started putting that out there. And yes, you could call that, you know, thought leadership in that space. But what actually made the difference and what helped people connect emotionally with that message rather than just it being information is that I had to go back to my core and say, like, why is this important? Why is it important to them? And why is it important to me? And for me, that came down to I have a fundamental belief that the world needs great marketers and that every marketer deserves the chance to build a career that inspires them. Hmm. And so all of what I put out around, you know, how to make yourself an attractive candidate, how to look for opportunities, you know, where things are going, what trends you should be across, are peppered by this position that if you really want this, there's a place for you. And we'll help you get there. And so that was my position.
Yeah.
And so that you can see that's not necessarily a technical thing or it's not an academic thing. It's a position on something. So if you can see something in your industry that you are prepared to take a stand for and sometimes it might be taking a stand against because if you're taking an active stand against something that's not right, well, you're inherently standing for something and that is your position. And that's where your values come in and that's where the emotional connection will come in. So if somebody's starting from scratch, coming back, and why I mention that is because their message is going to get traction so much quicker if they can actually stand for something, because you're going to get that emotion.
You're going to make more impact with it.
So much quicker.
Yeah.
So then if we're looking at timing, I would almost liken it a little bit to search engine marketing and content marketing generally from a timing perspective. An analogy I like to use is like when you're planting seeds, say you're a farmer, you plant the seed in the soil. For a long time, you don't see anything.
Yeah.
But 100%. You act as if that thing is still growing. You still show up. You still water it. Yeah. And then it's what you do, but then it's also what the external elements do, the sun and the soil.
You can't control everything.
But you put it into good soil and you keep doing that for a while and then you start to see tiny little seedling. So for some people that might be 6 months.
Yeah.
It might be 9 months.
Yeah.
For some people, if you've already got an established following and you start to do things actively, it might be 3 months. It's going to depend on how quickly you put stuff out there, where your audience is, how polarizing your position is, or how much need is there in the marketplace that you're serving. I mean, we can all think of a lot of niches and areas now that are hungry for people to stand up and lead the way, and so there is a lot of opportunity to do that. If yours is not one, then it might be a slower burn, but the point is it's like compound interest. The sooner you start, the longer that you have time working for you than against you. And the important thing with thought leadership is to really be consistent as well. From a timing perspective, look, you know, don't expect to be the world's expert overnight or even in a couple of weeks or in a couple of months. You know, many thought who we would regard as thought leaders honed their messaging, their positioning, their audience over many, many years. You need to accept that it's an evolving process as well. The thing is that you can't steer a car if it's not moving. So you actually do need to start getting into action. We'll cover off on a few things around how you can make sure you're on the right track.
So what are some of the challenges that you, like small business owners, Mike? So again, consider that they're kind of starting from scratch. You know, they now think, okay, it's going to take a little while for this to actually get some traction. And certainly in my experience, I see a lot of small business owners kind of start, even in just that space of the social media world, and they'll start really enthusiastically and you know, they'll get to 2 weeks, they'll get to 3 weeks, they get to 4 weeks and they go, it's not working. So we know that people want to, so we know that this is going to take time. What are some of the challenges that you think that people might come up against with this?
Okay, well, you just hit the nail on the head, really, in terms of the number one, which is the expectation. And look, you know, I'll just put it out there, just because if your audience is a small business, really don't expect huge results in your first 12 months.
It's fair.
You just got to say it. It's like growing your seeds. It's like some trees take longer to grow than others. But you'll start to see something, but don't expect to see a thriving bush, much less something bearing fruit in those first few months. Like, set your expectation. Like, really, anything that you see before 6 months is a bonus. You've got to be prepared to show up and you've got to be prepared to do the work. And there's no one individual or business that can shortcut nature's principles of sowing and reaping. Planting and growing. It's the same for business. It's the same for content. It's the same for thought leadership. And you might be a one-hit wonder and you might publish something and it goes viral and gets picked up, but you need to have then the infrastructure to sustain that and build it and grow on it. And the rate at which audiences are consuming content at the moment, you'll be forgotten very quickly if you're not out there consistently. It's not like 5-10 years ago where there was that one defining article and you were an overnight superstar of your industry. There are a lot of voices. And now where businesses probably like you are hearing people like Jane and myself talking about this stuff and they're all doing it, the level is continually raising. The bar is getting higher. So some of the, coming back to the challenges, and I think I've drilled home that one around expectation, set realistic expectation that it is going to take time. But pepper that with the fact that if you don't do it in 12 months, your competitors will have done it and you still won't have done it and you're still going to have to serve your 12 months of showing up and consistency before you start getting results. So you should actually start doing it because things are not going to change. It's not going to get easier. I think now is the time to be showing up and putting out good thought leadership content consistently. So it was interesting. I wrote some pieces at the beginning of the year where just the general marketplace was changing and it was going to be much harder for people to get their messages heard in 6 to 9 months. And I think I wrote that in January.
Did you jinx us, Nina?
No. You know what? I actually take that back because it came forward by 3 months. And what happened with, you know, the coronavirus pandemic and all of that, everyone having to go online real quickly, I think the emergence of that is already now that, you know, there are more companies online. People are more used to consuming information online. There are more people now who are completely comfortable being on video online, that are writing online, that even in video, what was, let's quote unquote, working 6 months ago in getting attention won't work now because there's so much of it, and it's just changing. So, I mean, bottom line is, like, now's the time to start, because it's not going to get any easier. Yeah. And the longer you've got time working for you. Now, the other challenges that definitely that small businesses face is consistency, like you said. And if you don't have a process in place, you are not going to follow through, because content, creating good content, is hard. There's no ifs or buts about it. Even for marketing agencies, it's hard. Yeah. Even for big brands, it's hard. It's hard for everybody, and you're not alone. So the key is to have a look with someone who's got a good handle on marketing. Might be someone you know, or your marketing consultant, or someone like Jane, or someone who can give you some solid advice and help you, if you don't already know this, understand where your audience is and what are the main problems they're having, and what do they look for from you? What solutions and help can you bring? And then doubling down on a plan to show up consistently, even if it's on one platform, it's better than nothing. And it's going to help you start your content creation muscle, because it doesn't come easily for anybody. You have to work at it, and you have to get better at it.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful segue into the next question, because you've actually developed one of those content systems that can help small businesses, or I imagine any size business, produce this kind of content.
Yeah. Well, you know me, like, and we kind of had a bit of a joke around it before. It's really about looking for efficiencies everywhere you can.
Yeah. Tell us about it. What's this system kind of based on? What do you do here?
It came off the back of a lot of, I guess, frustration that I had felt even in my own agency around not being able to produce content at a scale that I wanted. And I also saw so many other agencies, friends and colleagues and industry peers studying with the same thing. And we're agencies, we do this stuff, not to mention small businesses who struggle with this and don't have a lot of budget for it. Yeah. Like the only ones who were really nailing it well were large corporations with a really, really big budget, or people starting out with like an incredible amount of time on their hands. Yeah. But for everybody else, it was really, really hard to do it consistently. Yeah. And so working out what you can use to, there's that term, you probably heard of it, repurposing. And that doesn't just mean putting the same stuff everywhere. Yeah. It really is important to contextualize your message to different platforms. However, there are ways that you can do that while still maintaining efficiencies. Yeah. So my process that I developed, and I'm happy to share that with your listeners, we can give them some information as to where they can go and get that, really derived from how do we produce content at scale on a sustainable basis, but also make sure that it's authentic and uniquely you, and reflecting your brand. Because that's another mistake that a lot of small businesses make, and I'm sure that many listeners in the sound of my voice at the moment have made this. They've thought, oh, I need to go get content, and they've tried to outsource to some random freelancer and say, hey, can you produce content about X, Y, and Z? And basically they've just burned their money, because they get stuff they can't use, or it's not sustainable, or they don't have an ongoing relationship with that person, or that person doesn't really understand them. And readers are so attuned these days. We have to give our audience way more credit than a lot of businesses do. They're not dummies. They really have such finely attuned senses that if you haven't written something and you've just outsourced it to someone and said, you know what, you know, can you write me something that includes these keywords or about this topic? If it's not deeply reflective of your business and talking about your experiences as a business and your insights, people are going to discard it. And so that's just I guess, on the mistakes and challenges side. So having a process that you can actually take information that you have within your organization. There are a few keys you can do this. Something else you can do is just document everything. Record things, obviously not sensitive information, but if you are doing an interview or a talk to your team about something, just get in the habit of documenting. And whether you use that, like some people do, and they actually put their cut up and put videos out there, or they put audio out there, or they give it, they transcribe it and then and put that into a post, or they extract quotes and comments out of that. There's a lot of things that you can do from that, but that is uniquely you, authentic content. And yeah, so that's how you minimize the risk of ending up with this disconnection between what you're trying to put out and what people are getting, because it is actually you. So having the right systems in place to support that is really, really crucial as well. Start with something and do it consistently. And when you've nailed that, build on that. Even set yourself a monthly challenge. Do one thing for 4 weeks, yeah, even if it's something that takes half an hour, you're investing a small amount of money into something. When I talk about that money, I'm not necessarily talking about spending it on people. There's going to be a cost to you on your time or your team's time and your resources. So just start small and build incrementally. And when you've got something right, then add the next layer to it.
And I think, like, for example, before we started interviewing, before we started our, you know, official interview today, you and I were chatting and you'd mentioned that, you know, we were setting up the video properly, because you said, what I'm actually going to do from this interview, so this will obviously be one piece of content, it'll be a podcast interview that goes out via the How to Do Marketing show, which I can share for my platforms, you can share for your platforms, and it's both kind of the thought leadership tick that we can both kind of tick off our list. But then you've said that you're actually going to grab some of the video grabs and use 30-second, you know, little quotes, etc., that you can share out via your channels. So that's like a complete repurpose of some of the insight that you're lending today. And then there's obviously, you know, you could put some written quotes together off the back of that. And even with this podcast, for the way that we get the content out there, we obviously have the recorded audio and then we'll get the audio transcribed. So there's some written content and then we'll use some quotes and we do audio grabs and we do written grabs. And even though it's all from the same derived, you know, one piece of content, there's multiple pieces of content that could feed back into that thought leadership. So I guess for small businesses, we're asking them to kind of go and look for your low-hanging fruit in the content that you're already producing. You might run a training course, you might run a workshop, you might decide to tape an initial consultation with one of your clients that's really typical of all the kind of information that you'll share with lots of people. Look for those low-hanging fruit of content that's already there and think about all the different ways that you could repurpose that content. Is that right?
Absolutely. And when you're doing that, look at it through the lens of, is it punchy? Is it snackable? Can someone listen to this and actually walk away either knowing something they didn't know before or seeing something in a different way or inspired to action? And that doesn't take a long period of time. That could take 30 seconds, it could take a minute, could take 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But looking at everything through that lens, would this be helpful to someone? And if so, in what context? Would it be most helpful written? Would it be most helpful visualized? And I wouldn't encourage you, if you're right starting out, to go down the full-on infographic route, but it can be very, very powerful, you know, to take what you can to turn it into that. But initially, if you're just starting out, I would say that something like a LinkedIn post where you're actually sharing something of value once a week is not too hard an ask. And it will start to help you. Like, A, it will already start building your brand, but B, it will also start you getting into that way of thinking, which is looking for opportunity everywhere. Is what I'm saying going to serve someone?
Yes.
Because if you're doing that in the natural course of what you do as a business owner and how you show up and how you serve your industry, that then comes across far more helpful and authentic than you going and saying, oh, hey, can you go and write me a blog post on 10 ways to grow your dental practice or something like that, you know, where I think people are over listicles and to-do lists. They've heard all the stuff that is they mentally assent to as correct. They know it. But the person who can inspire them to actually act on it, that's the person that is going to win their hearts and get that reciprocity credit.
Yeah, I love it. Now, something that a lot of small business owners and even myself as a marketer, and I imagine you as a marketer as well, is concerned about is measurement.
Yep.
How do we measure the effects of our thought leadership? What are the metrics that small businesses should put towards their success rate or assessing their success rate with this?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, Jane, and one I wish there was a very definitive industry standard answer to. So I'll give you two answers. One is, because we all like numbers, some specific metrics that are going to help guide you in terms of understanding your thought leadership effectiveness. Like for larger brands, there are whole agencies that exist around measuring this stuff. But for smaller businesses, there's not a one size fits all, but here are some things that you can look at. You can look at your email open rates. If people are actually opening your emails, it means they want to hear from you. Yes. And email is a great place where you absolutely should be demonstrating your thought leadership, because our email inboxes, all of us, they're already going to be way too cluttered. We get too much stuff. So we only open emails from people that we want to hear from. 100%. So that's really, really good. So if you're wondering, is my thought leadership resonating? Is it landing? Have a look at what your email open rates are now or have been. And then once you start being proactive in terms of sharing helpful information via email, do you notice a trend in that opening? That's one indicator. I mean, having said that, you have to think there could be a whole lot of different factors that influence that. So it's not a one size fits all. I'm just going to give you a few things that you can use. Certainly, social engagement is another one. And while we talk a lot around the concept of vanity metrics and that, you know, we don't want to make decisions based on likes and shares and comments because they don't pay the bills. And that is very true in one sense. However, if you are writing something and you are getting insightful comments or people putting meaningful contributions, that is indicative of the fact that your messaging may be landing, because people are taking the time to read and process and write a considered response. So if you're just getting a whole lot of likes on something, look, you need to take that with a grain of salt, and it's going to depend on your followers and things like that. But if you're actually getting people who will engage back with you, better still, if you get people who will message you saying, I saw you talking about this, 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 and this, and that really helped me, etc. This is not the science. Like, as we know, marketing is science and it's art in equal parts, and now it's also a lot of intuition. And common sense. Let's say science, art, intuition, and common sense. There you go. There's a piece of thought leadership. You might even see it on YouTube. You know, so looking at it through that, through that matrix and saying, if people are commenting to me saying, this, I'm really enjoying your stuff, I can make an informed opinion that my stuff is helping people.
Yes.
Now, I did a really interesting test around, this is just, you know, just throw this in, another practical thing. If you've got an email list and you want to clean it up, which is always a good thing, have a clean email list. 100%. I did that a week or two ago, and a couple of hundred people that hadn't been engaging, have a rather large list. I thought, I'm just going to pick a handful of them and experiment, send them an email telling them I'm going to delete them from my list because I haven't. And one of the filters I used was, you haven't opened an email in 90 days.
Yeah.
But you've been on my list for longer than 90 days. So I sent them an email saying, I only want to email people who actually want to hear from me, don't want to think. So I'm going to delete you from my list. Really polite, just wanting to let you know. You can always come back on later on, but just a courtesy. The number of people I had who sent reply saying, please don't take me on your list. I love your stuff.
Really? Wow. Like, that was very brave, Nina. That was great. What a good idea.
But that's not a scientific metric. But to me, it's a common sense metric. People like the kind of stuff that I put out on my email.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I love it.
Keep doing it. And it also reaffirms to me, like us, think about how we behave.
Yeah.
When we like something, we don't always reply to the person. We don't always open
everything.
It doesn't mean that we think less of a person.
Yeah.
But when you can take that as a little bit of a snapshot, a little bit of intelligence, and from that create, well, there are a lot of people out there that are receiving what I'm saying. I may not always hear from them because, you know, we don't have AI mind telling
them exactly
what's going on inside their heads yet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but that's another thing that we can do. So other things that you can look at is obviously your cost of acquisition, what you're spending on marketing overall in a particular period versus how many customers you are getting. And if you're doing more thought leadership and you're spending the same and you're getting better results, or you're spending less elsewhere and getting the same results, then that's indicative that you're tapping into the undeniable evidence that thought leadership does drive sales.
Yeah.
Refer back to those statistics that I mentioned at the top of the show, which was that 58% of people will award business are based on a company's thought leadership. So, and then something else you can look at is if you're in the B2B space, the length of your pipeline, if that's happening quicker because people have that trust factor nailed because they already know you, so they're not having to get to know you through the sales process. That's another metric that you can track. And then another one, which is, again, not scientific, but one that I think is really important, how many non-customers are referring business to you?
Right.
That's one that I really like, because customers may be referring other people because of the fantastic customer service they're getting, or the wonderful product, or the nice little notepad you gave them, or whatever it is that you're doing to keep them happy. But non-customers probably aren't experiencing that. But if they're seeing you show thought leadership in the marketplace, they will often say, hey, are you looking for a dentist or a pool cleaner or a tire manufacturer or whatever it is? You've got to talk to this person. And so having these people out there as advocates, and I think in our online connected circles, we're starting to see more and more people in that who are in the online space who may not necessarily know us, but are referring business. So that's another one that small businesses can use.
That's great. Excellent.
And I say one more thing, which is completely not scientific, but really important. It's, you can't measure it. It's not a metric.
Yeah.
You know that principle that I referred to, you go back to Robert Cialdini around reciprocity, and that is, if people might have been getting information from about your area from a whole lot of different sources, and they probably have. They've been gathering information in their pretty little heads for so long. But if you can be the person through your thought leadership that actually gets them over the line to take that first step, or to take action, or to get that result, you will be the one that will be credited with that reciprocity. They will feel forever grateful. They will have an inextricable link in their head between this brand and this person and this result that I got.
Yeah, and I love it.
That's just, it's completely not a metric, but it's a really, really
it's
good
a thing.
Way.
Oh, I'm a huge believer in karma. I'm a huge believer in karma. And look, that at the end of the day, that comes down to remarkability, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, gosh, Nina, you've shared so much with us and you're so passionate about this topic. I love it. I love all of that fantastic insight and information that you've been able to share with us. And as I mentioned before, you have got a thought leadership content system you've developed to help businesses with. So if small business owners want to kind of get in touch with you to find out more about this, or maybe more about some of the other things that you offer, where can they find you?
Sure. I think in this context, I'm probably best to send them to the website thoughtleadership.io. I'm really making this a centralized resource for businesses and individuals that really want to go further in developing their own thought leadership. So, yes, I do provide thought leadership services through my agency for clients, etc., but I also teach a lot of businesses and entrepreneurs and marketers how to do thought leadership well themselves and go behind the scenes with a lot of these systems and processes. And I equally just put out a lot of resources which just help and support people in their own thought leadership journey wherever they're at. So, yeah, it's very fitting for the purpose of this podcast. Go to thoughtleadership.io.
Fantastic. Okay, brilliant. Thank you so much for all of that information. And I'm sure everyone will be very keen to check out the Thought Leadership site. I'm sure they can also connect with you on LinkedIn as well. And we'd love to hear your feedback on this interview. So thank you so much for that, Nina. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jane. Always lots of fun talking to you.
Well, what did you think about thought leadership? I know for me, it works. I've positioned myself as a thought leader in the small business marketing space for many years now. One book, a podcast, several hundred blog posts, and thousands of social media posts later, and I can say that it has definitely driven value to my business. How? Well, it has increased my visibility on platforms such as LinkedIn. It's helped position me as a marketing consultant who specializes in small business. And that helps me get the right type of inquiry, which has then led to excellent projects to work on. It's also led to speaking opportunities, and that's actually one of my business objectives. So my biggest takeaway from Nina were, my biggest takeaways, I should say, were: number one, thought leadership is inspiring or transformational content. So I guess think of the title there, thought and leader, someone leading their tribe with their thoughts and opinions. So it's not fact sheets or how-tos. It's kind of more philosophical in nature. So well-known thought leaders in the marketing world are people like Gary Vaynerchuk or Seth Godin. Seth and Gary's content inspires us to think a bit differently about marketing. It inspires us to behave in a certain way. It's thought-provoking. You can disagree with it. Number two, people want to know who is behind a brand. If you want to contribute in the thought leadership space, then it is more effective if your thought leadership is led by a founder or owner. So sorry to those business owners who thought that they might get away with this hiding behind the curtains. Think, you know, Daniel Flynn from Thank You, Lisa Messenger from The Collective Hub, Emma Isaacs from Business Chicks, you know, or even Steve Jobs from Apple. They are all excellent examples of founders who've become thought leaders within their industry and as a result have contributed significant growth to the business. So if you are enjoying all of the small business marketing insight that is being shared out here on this show, please be sure to hit subscribe and leave a rating and review. Also, we'd love you to join in the discussions about small business marketing in the How to Do Marketing group on Facebook. I'm in the group all the time answering people's questions and publishing snackable marketing tips. So join us. Just go to Facebook and search for the How to Do Marketing group. Until next time, happy marketing.
You've been listening to another Morgan Media production.